You are listening to episode number 158 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Uka chaka, uka, uka, uka chaka, uka, uka, uka chaka, uka, uka, uka chaka, uka, uka, uka.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me. When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's alright. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing that you're in love with me.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the next exciting episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We apologize for being a week off, but we're back at full, well, not at full strength, but whatever. We're back, and finally, we will talk about, yes, the most anticipated trailer to come out of Marvel since Iron Man in 2007. So, but before we do that, I am always and forever will be your host, Iggy, a.k.a. Ben from the great state of Texas. Joining me, Mr. Brian Powers, who represents Red Sox Nation.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Mr. Taser, who I think is a Mets fan. I'm not exactly sure.
They're a local team. I support the Mets, but I'm a Yankees fan.
Okay, Yankees. Well.
Right. Oh, God.
28 World Series, that's all I gotta say.
2004. Now, fuck off, let's just get
28 World Series.
If we're gonna do this, we're gonna be here all night.
Let's 28 World Series.
Okay.
I can't argue shit. So, because no baseball team in said Texas has won anything yet. All right, so we have only two listings because we know these two news topics are going to get a lot of talking. Brian, kick us off with some Fantastic Four casting.
Okay, folks. Well, you know how they were planning on rebooting that whole Fantastic Four thing? Well, they've gone ahead and they've set down their official casting for the upcoming reboot. In the first corner, we have Miles Teller as Mr. Fantastic, a.k.a. Reed Richards. In the opposing corner, there's Kate Mara as Susan Storm, also known as the Invisible Woman. In that third corner over there, the kind of dark one, is Michael B. Jordan, who will be playing Johnny Storm, a.k.a. the Human Torch. And finally, the one that disturbs me most, Jamie Bell as Ben Grimm, a.k.a. the Thing.
Who?
See, that was my reaction to at least half this cast until I realized who the hell. Jamie Bell, I recognize as, oh, he's that guy from Jumper, the British one. Yeah, that makes sense. Sure, make him Ben Grimm. And then Michael B. Jordan. Yeah, exactly. Michael B. Jordan really needs no introduction. I mean, he's fairly consistent. He's on The Wire. He's on Chronicle. Things that Wes will love me for name dropping. He's a really
still not as good as Southland, but whatever.
What? Hey.
Hey, Southland's a great crop procedural. Not even that. It's great. It's a great show. It's a good show.
He was also on Friday Night Lights. So
what?
Michael B. Jordan was on Friday Night Lights.
The television series. Who did he play in Friday Night Lights?
I've never
heard of Friday Night Lights.
The name of the series is Casey, but I brought it up because it's about a Texas football team, and I know Iggy.
It was a very famous book turned to a very famous movie starring Billy Bob Thornton.
It was about sports.
It was about Texas high school football. About one.
There you go. That's why I don't.
It's about one team. It's a good movie. You should watch the movie. I know you don't care, but you should watch the movie. It's a good movie. Okay, so Michael B. Jordan, black man playing a white man. A lot of controversy.
Woo!
Is this the part where we get labeled as racist because we say we want a white guy to play a black? We want a white guy to play a.
No. We're not racist until we say we want to see the black guy on fire. That's when things get racist.
You know what?
Hi-o.
Yeah, apparently that's a thing. I learned that. Like, well, that's dark. Okay.
Yes, it will be. Give it a minute.
God damn it. Okay, so.
You know what makes it even better?
What?
Give him a white costume with a hood.
Give him the Future Foundation costume. He'll love that.
I will say, looking at their pictures, and again, I'm not going to call whether they can play it because I don't know none of these people except for Michael B. Jordan. Miles Teller does look like the kind of nerd who they're going for the ultimate Fantastic Four, so the younger group. They're not going for the Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, where they're a lot older and they're out of college, right?
This is Ultimate Fantastic Four.
So they're going for younger kids. Okay, that's fine. That's the trend. Everybody's going, Spider-Man did it, the Avengers did it. Well, they took Element, whatever. You know what I mean? Okay, so with that said, he looks, you know, like he could play the smart genius guy who could, you know, gets the girl. We'll see. I've never seen him in anything. Michael B. Jordan, you know, as Human Torch, you know, for all intents and purposes, Human Torch is the comic relief guy, you know? It would have been funny if they would have cast Kevin Hart for this role. That would have been hilarious.
Oh, no. What is wrong with you?
What's wrong with me? I like Kevin Hart. Let him play a superhero.
Kevin
Hart is also older than all of them.
Ah, well, who cares? Yeah, he's short. He can blend in. He's a fine guy. So, I don't know. I mean, it's the Human Torch. He's at this point in the Marvel Universe, he's the party guy, you know? Maybe they'll give him some kind of death. I don't know. Just don't. What I don't want with him is, because he's black, is they're going to give him stereotypical black background, stereotypical black things to do. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't, you know.
What's the matter? You don't want to see him strutting down the street in his tracksuit and Kango with his ghetto blaster on his shoulder, bumping that
fried chicken and drinking some grape soda.
Oh, yeah. And don't forget about his homies, his posse who rolls up to him on the street, gives him daps and stuff.
And holding his giant boombox.
What is this, 1985?
How old it was. I would love to see that Black Johnny Storm, 1985.
He's wearing a Kango and some Puma sneakers. There you go.
Hell yeah.
All I'm saying is I don't...
Some Adidas and Lee's on his pants and Adidas on his feet.
God damn it.
With D-Bomb beside it, Jay with the B.
I'm sure he's going to do fine. It's really... I highly doubt I don't normally side with Tazes, but they probably chose him because they wanted more ethnic diversity, and he was the best of the lot. Let's face it.
Well, he's also an incredibly talented actor.
No, I'm sure he is, but also because he's also very talented, but also because he's black. Let's call it spade a spade. They see the trend of adding more diversity for the diversity.
Did you just say call a spade a spade?
Yep.
I know.
Holy shit. This, and you say we got dark? We were pumping it up as a hip hop icon. Holy shit.
Moving on. All I'm saying is that's basically what this is. Is he going to do fine? Sure, but it's needless. You know, I officially demand for, what's his name? The guy who was in, who just played Edgar Allan Poe in that movie.
John Cusack?
John Cusack as Black Panther T'Challa. Yes, let's do that. Because that's fine.
No,
right?
No. I like the idea of Charlton Copley. At least he's legit African.
No, I'm just saying, let's get a white guy to play a black guy. You know, if we're going to have role bases.
Yeah, Charlton Copley.
Let's do this.
He's a white African guy.
And I'm going to, Taze, I'm going to execute.
From District 9?
Yes, it is. And the guy from 18, he played Murdoch.
Can we get Asian Captain America? Can we get Asian Captain America? That'd be awesome. Can we
have Black Captain America, because that'd really happen.
Can we have Black Thor? What about Black Thor? That'd be awesome, right?
No, instead of Asian Captain America, let's make him Middle Eastern.
Middle Eastern Captain America.
Like, that would cause problems.
That'd ruffle feathers.
Yep. Can we have Mexican Wolverine, please?
See?
All I'm saying is, it's this. Look. Don't fucking judge people just because they want white actors to play a white role. It's great that he's got the role. I'm sure he's going to do fine. But let's not act like anything was won here. All right? Let's not act like this is some kind of victory for race relations. Because it's not. It's a bullshit move for diversity sake. I hope he does.
I'll agree with that, because if they really wanted to make an impression of for diversity's sake.
All black cast.
Get black.
All black cast. But,
No. I wouldn't do that, because then you automatically eliminate like 90% of your audience, because white people don't go see black movies.
That's why Tyler Perry makes money, huh? Okay.
Yeah, but look at who he's making the money off of. As a matter of fact, one of the few movies that broke $100 million was done by Keenan Ivory Wayans.
Mm-hmm.
what was it, Scary Movie 1 and 2?
Yeah.
When 3 came out, it didn't have the Wayans. They lost 40, 45 million right there.
Wow, that's...
Black audience gone.
That's hilarious. So, and next up is Kate Mara. I have no idea who this...
Yeah, where's she from?
She is very attractive, though.
Kate Mara has previously appeared on House of Cards in 24, among other things. So,
24?
I don't know. I'm gonna look that up more extensively, but yeah, she appears to be the oldest of the bunch at 31, which doesn't really...
Wow. Oh,
she doesn't look that old, that's for sure.
No, yeah, she's definitely aged well, so, you know, there's that.
That's mean.
What? It's legit.
So, you know? but she seems fine. She seems she could play Susan Storm.
That's like that chick on Walking Dead who's supposed to be like the 19-year-old, but she's like 28 in real life.
She's from Shooter. And
she was in that, too.
And the one with Tim Allen with the superpowers.
Tim Allen. Oh, God, no.
Yeah,
no.
That was her. That was her.
Oh, no.
Tim Allen? Okay, never mind. All right, and finally, the most controversial one, I agree with Brian, Jamie.
There you go, Zoom. That was it.
And nobody remembers.
He's 27. He's only 5'7", but whatever, they can give him lifts. Okay. You know, even in the Ultimate Universe, Ben Grimm has a tough veneer to him, you know? That linebacker with the heart of gold, right?
He's also tall.
He's also tall. Taller than Reed, you know? Which...
This is the guy who has to convincingly protect Reed from bullies. That is what we're aiming for here.
And again, they could wow me with movie magic because fucking it's movie magic, but based on the initial pictures, I don't see what they saw.
They could CGI him.
They could, but at the same time, just from his, like, how he is before he becomes the thing, I don't see him as, not necessarily as Ben Grimm, as his loyal friend of Reed. Maybe they got him because he can play angst really well, because Lord knows Ben's probably going to be angsty that Reed can't turn him back in the movie, because you know they're going to play up that angle, or maybe they won't, who knows. But he's the only one that makes me go, huh? Him? I would rather have Josh Gad.
You know what's sad?
Don't even try.
This guy looks like he'd make a better Johnny Storm.
Actually, you know what? I don't know if you saw it, Taser, but Michael Hyde posted something in the Marvel News thread. This is originally from Comics Alliance. Someone suggested swapping the roles around. They put Miles Teller as Ben Grimm, Jamie Bell as Johnny Storm, and Michael B. Jordan as Mr. Fantastic.
See, I could work with that, and that would lend credence to there being some form of
diversity,
upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That I would work with, but, you know, ain't happening.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Jamie Bell. I don't see.
I know him from stuff. I mean, he was in Jumper, like I said, and he was in Kong, King Kong, that remake that happened a while back.
What was he in? Was he the fucking crazy kid who... Was he that guy? Who was he?
He was the one who palled around with the big black dude.
Oh, that was him?
That's Jamie Bell.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Wow.
Yeah.
We're not in the cast. He just seems in terms of, for me personally, the only one that makes me go, huh. That's a thing. That's really a thing.
Yeah. Well, suffice to say, I was not happy in the least.
Well, you want Michael Chiklis, so you were never going to be happy to be.
Hey, there is nothing wrong with Michael Chiklis.
There's nothing wrong with Chiklis, but he is way too, if they're going with a complete reboot, just like J.K. Simmons, just like Kirk Connors wasn't brought back for Amazing Spider-Man. They're definitely not going to bring back Michael Chiklis for Fantastic
Four.
Well,
see, that's
why they bring back Kirk Connors.
Well, I mean, the actor who played Kirk Connors
means Dylan Baker.
I mean Dylan Baker. There you go.
Oh.
Yeah, they've got a new... if they're going to reboot it, there's no way they're going to bring back Chiklis. It would have been awesome, but they're not doing it.
Wait a minute. Did Lizard die in the last one?
Nope, he lived.
Yeah, remember...
So then why wouldn't they bring him back?
Well, no, not the character, the lizard.
He's
the
talking
actor.
About lizard from Raimi's trilogy.
The guy.
Oh, the big wink. Sorry.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Not the lizard himself.
Right.
The guy who played Kirk Connors / the lizard.
I was actually thinking of both the guy from Amazing Spider-Man and the guy who Johnny V had as his avatar for a long time.
Because that
guy actually looked like a Kirk Connors, you know?
Yeah.
Never used him and, you know, whatever. I agree with you. this guy had to play a thing, Ben Grimm. I could kind of see a Ben Grimm, you know? I could see him being a guy that came up on Yancey Street and went through all of that mess. Him being Thing, though, I don't know. I got question marks there. But it's the same with everything else here. If I'm going to be completely objective, all of them are complete question marks. I have no idea how, you know, any of them are going to do. I don't even know if Kate Mara's going to dye her hair blonde or not, you know.
That's not too big of a deal. I'm worried about it.
No, but I'm just saying, well, if Superman showed up with blonde hair, wouldn't you go, huh, what the fuck? You know, so.
But Captain America, I mean, if she's a dirty blonde, it's like, I mean, Lois. Lois Lane, I know Lois Lane is a brunette, and she was a strawberry blonde in The Man of Steel. That didn't throw me off. I knew who she was.
That kind of did to me, though, because it's like, how, what the fuck? You know,
I can only speak for me, but for me.
All right, I understand.
She had the attitude, and, like, I didn't care if she didn't have the hair like Margot Kidder.
All right. That's fair, and that's completely valid. She managed to carry the character regardless of what her hair looked like. But I'm just saying, you know, it's like that one thing which should be inconsequential, but, yeah, it still kind of hangs with you even after everything's all said and done.
Uh-huh.
So, like, you know, Jamie Bell here. You know, and Miles Teller, I have nothing about this guy. I mean, I've at least seen Jumper, so I know who Jamie Bell is. And Michael B. Jordan, I didn't watch Friday Night Lights TV show, but I watched the movie, you know, just so I'd not fuck with you guys anymore.
Gotcha.
And I've seen Chronicle. And I'll be honest, I don't regard him as a fine actor. He gets the job done, as far as I'm concerned, from the one thing I've seen him in. But I'm not, you know, I can't say he's a horrible pick or anything. I don't have that exposure to him to make that judgment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, picking him, and I can't say he's a fine actor for the, you know, for the role. I personally can't do that. I think he might be able to pull it off, but, you know, that's hoping he does so that this movie doesn't tank like the last two did. You know,
the last two tanked because of stupid story decisions.
Hey, the first one was tolerable.
No, it's
well,
not.
Well, no. I'd say not only that, but the relationships, specifically between Sue and Reed. Sue and Reed never worked. You know, they had no chemistry.
Exactly.
It was more like
Johnny and Ben had more chemistry than Reed and Sue in the first
That's the
two.
Only good thing about Rise of the Silver Surfer is the camaraderie. Well, no, not even that one. In the first one, they had more camaraderie. In the second one,
right, exactly.
It was sort of like
the second one just gave us topless Sue.
Yeah,
and even then, we didn't get to see much.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, here, I would like to see this movie work because, you know, it would give us another one, and it would also hopefully be good. You know, I don't want to see this movie fail. Michael B. Jordan added to the cast aside, I don't know. You know, all of these people.
It's a question.
I understand which version we're working with, which isn't a surprise because working with the ultimate versions of the Marvel characters gives them more leeway because I think comic fans, specifically Marvel fans, when we think of this character, that character, we think the iconic ones that have come up from the 60s on.
Mm-hmm.
Working with the Ultimate, you know, the Ultimate Verse, the U-verse, fuck it. There's not as much dogma. You know, there's not so much stuff that's like kind of set in stone and it has to be a certain way and has to have a certain look. There's more leeway in how they can riff these characters off in another medium, specifically here on screen. You know, we can be more forgiving. You know, things can be changed and you know, molded and twisted. Whereas with the previous movie, you know, I wanted to see the F and 4 at the top of the freaking Baxter Building. I realized that it wasn't originally like that, but fuck that. I like that version of the building better, you know? There were a lot of other things that I wanted to see and I never got to see because, you know, they made changes and did things what they did and, you know, whatever. Here, they have more leeway and I can only cross my fingers here. Like with the Amazing Spider-Man, they went with the ultimate version in that, which gives them more leeway, which is why we got, you know, what's her name?
Gwen.
Thank you. Which is why we got Gwen as the relationship chick instead of
Mary Jane Watson.
Mary Jane. So, and that I can, you know, I can let go to see how they play it out rather than if it was supposed to be iconic, you know, 616, but they just decided to do this anyway, you know, because I'm a comics fan, and, you know, that would just make me go, oh, what the fuck? Rawr! Rage type on the internet and scream about it. You know, that kind of bullshit.
Uh-huh. All right, so, Brian, want to wrap this up with your thoughts? Your thoughts?
Michael Chiklis for Ben Grimm.
It's never going to happen. Stop trying to make it happen.
Fine. The cast... It's not. I don't even hate it. I'm just really perplexed by some of the choices here. Not to say that I'm trying to be better about calling shit before I see anything from it. This is really just, you know.
We learned our mistake from X-Men First Class.
I was going to say Dark Knight, but that too.
I'm going to keep making that mistake, damn it, because I'm a comic fan.
Fair
but
enough.
I do hope this movie works because, I, you know, like I said, I'd like to see another one. And I really cannot wait to see if they even address the fact that Michael B. Jordan is black, because that, I think, would actually be the true test. If they just regard him as Johnny Storm and who cares about his color, you know, which, you know, would be fine.
What was the point of doing it anyways, then, if you're not going to?
Well, because, I mean, well, ultimately, when you have diversity, what you want is there to nobody to notice that this person's that or whatever. You know, regardless of whether he's black, white.
Instead, they stick him in the one role that would have drawn eyes where, wait, he has a white sister?
But considering that we've had mixed couples for like the last 40, 50 years, even though it's only been like maybe the last 20, 30 that we've been kind of sort of paying attention to it, I think this could be a good start.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, the comic book fan in me looks at this and goes, the fuck? You know? And I recognize it for what it is. And the... Wow, I don't know what to call this part of myself, but I'd say the real me kind of calls it both bullshit and maybe a positive move. But it's
changing something you grew up with.
No, not so much. Well, it does. It kind of does that. But it's an attempt to change how we think. And I don't mind that. I like that. But I also don't like the fact that I know this wouldn't work the other way. You know, or at least we won't see that for a while.
We won't see Black Mr. Fantastic.
Well, no. Not so, well, yes. Yes, there's that. But also, like, if we do get... if Marvel does decide to greenlight... a Black Panther movie, yeah, he won't be black. And
you mean he won't be white?
I think that would cause up way too much of an uproar using the same logic, you know, which is the hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And I admit to...
Which is why I don't like it at all. It's just hypocritical from all sides.
I understand that, and I agree with you, too. But, see, that's the funny thing about it. It is hypocritical, and yet, you know, being diverse... is a good thing, you know? So, It's like B.D. Wong when he played Linus in what was it, Broadway's Peanuts play, you know, which to me, I kind of went, oh, okay, it's kind of odd, but hey, what the hell? The man got death threats. You know, so he's, you know, it's the change and, you know, how we accept the change and should we attempt the change. I think we can attempt the change. I just honestly, the relationship here is what makes it weird. Like Fearless said, I just kind of go, well, if they had made Ben Grimm black, okay, you know, that would have been, I guess, easier. But the relationship here is what causes, you know, the big concern. At least for me.
B-Rai, you wanted to wrap up your thoughts, buddy.
Yeah, like I said, this whole thing is kind of like, it's not an exclamation point of anger, it's a question mark of what are they planning. Like, I know what they're planning, but just, there are just so many steps they could have taken otherwise to not make this as complicated as this is turning out to be. I mean,
like make Sue Storm black too.
Yeah, there's that. But also, they just went through so many unnecessary shit. Like the whole thing about Michael B. Jordan. Like, really, they could have saved a bunch of stuff about like casting was either Ben or Reed, but they wouldn't do either. So they put him in the one spot where he'll be noticed because he has a white sister instead of just making Sue black. And Michael Chiklis should be thing. He is the perfect Ben Grimm, and nobody else cares.
Actually, he was the perfect thing, and what's his name who played Cap was the perfect Johnny Storm. I mean, he was the perfect Johnny Storm.
Yeah, he was.
He was.
You know? I mean, yay, fine. He upgraded his role, and he became Captain America. Personally, I liked him better as Johnny Storm. I'll say it, you know, but that's just me.
I still like him from that dude in Scott Pilgrim, and his role in The Losers.
I definitely agree with him in The Losers. He was damn funny in The Losers.
Yeah, he was.
He was great. But we will be seeing Chris Evans next month in Captain America: The Winter Soldier. But after Captain America: Winter Soldier, we got a long way to August. Because August 1st, 2015, officially launches the debut of Guardians of the Galaxy. And for the past several months, we have been teased with gifts from Tumblr. We have been teased with sneak footage. We have not seen anything. They have been, and that led to a lot of people worrying. Well, maybe this movie is going to be the one that derails the train. Well, we don't know that yet. But we officially, thanks to Jimmy Kimmel, who's the fucking man, saw the first trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy, and I haven't said my thoughts, so I'm going to say them right here.
Ben, this off.
This was fucking fantastic. I do have questions, but I thought Chris Pratt, and this is where I'm going to get hate and get a little eyebrows raised, but I thought he had that RDJ charisma about him that's going to make the audience want to attach to him immediately. Maybe at the same level of quirkiness, but that same level of charisma that you're not going to be able to take your eyes off the screen when he's talking, whether he's being serious or having witty banter. I love that they're playing up that he's an 80s kid, because that's clearly what he is. Because I think the story is that he was abducted in the 80s, so we'll see. I love that the trailer opens up like that super serious trailer, and then Star-Lord. Who? Star-Lord,
man. The famous outlaw.
Who
the
hell is that?
I love that. I love that. It was great. And if anything, what this movie shows is that it still sticks with the fun. And that, but they're from the montage, there's going to be plenty of action sequences. I think Nebula, that was the blue-haired person, blue-skinned person, who for some, this is how much Mass Effect I am.
That's Nebula.
I thought that was Liara for a second. I'm like, when's Mass Effect? It's like, no.
Oh, that would be sweet.
So we didn't get a lot. We saw a little bit of, we saw a naked Gamora, which was interesting.
Was she naked?
She looked naked.
we are led to believe she was, in fact, naked.
She could be topless and still have her pants
on. But hey, they divvied it up. They gave Chris Pratt a shirtless scene.
Yeah, they did. I did love the rolling of the finger and then the indecent human gesture. That was a chuckle. Seeing Rocket Raccoon being a snivy little shit, we didn't get a lot about him, but he looks like he's going to be what the fuck am I doing here kind of person. Groot didn't really say much, but it was cool to see Groot on screen for the first time. Batista as Drax, it's Batista. I'm not expecting much. It's fucking Batista. He's getting booed out of the arenas right now. So, yeah, I was really excited, and I liked the montage of mixing Ooga Chaka, and then eventually with
Ooga Chaka, Ooga 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 Chaka,
and eventually
Ooga.
Mixing that with Hooked on a Feeling.
The dramatic, yeah.
It was. I thought that was great. You know, I was like,
I thought it was good too.
That was a great trailer. So in terms of getting me excited, it did its job for a trailer. Does this mean the movie's gonna be great? No. Does this mean the movie's gonna suck? No. It just means I have something to look forward to in August, and my ease is a little bit off. But I think this is going to be in the lines of Iron Man 1 level sorts of fun, with just some space. But the only thing, so that was the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer was awesome. It was a little surreal because when they did the trumpet section for Hooked on a Feeling, I swear to God, I thought I was watching Price is Right when the logo came around, just how it worked. I was like, am I watching the Price is Right now? it just worked out that way. But it was surreal to see. It was interesting to see. I'm really excited. I cannot wait to see this movie, and I can't wait to see more. I didn't really tell you much. It was more of an exposition trailer. But I thought it was golden, and it was awesome. So there you go. Guardians of the Galaxy. What a bunch of a-holes. Brian, I know you're going to share my sentiment. Mm-mm.
Okay, so here's what I'm gonna do to humor our friend here, Mr. Taser. I will start with something that I was kind of disappointed with, but I'll just start there. Okay, so I will say that I was expecting a bit more. Not in the sense that this trailer didn't show me enough that the movie it sort of did, but it for a trailer that showed so many different scenes, it felt like it was a bit light on material, like it was lacking something. Now, that being said, it's not like it disappointed me. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm talking in circles here. I felt like for the first premiere trailer of this movie, maybe they should have showcased a bit more. That being said, I understand why they went the route they did, because as we all know, Guardians isn't exactly an A-list property. At least it won't be. I mean, who can tell what will happen when this movie drops. But that having been said, I understand why, because they're trying to introduce these characters and get people invested in them now so that when the movie finally comes out, they'll go and see it. Because, well, like I said, these characters aren't the most well-known. They're not the most popular property. So this being Marvel's next step in their cinematic line, it is definitely they're investing on getting people in the seats, which is why I know they're just kind of they're spelling it out for you, basically. That being said, what we saw was fucking magnificent. Fucking magnificent. It was superb. Okay, he doesn't quite have like the Tony Stark charm. I kind of doubt it there, but he definitely has his own charisma, his own confidence, and that comes from him sort of being in a situation where he knows he can't really, or he's kind of been a little bit over his head, but like he has a plan, it's evolving, and he knows that no matter what throws at him, he'll be able to overcome it and adapt it and all that stuff, even if it's not immediate, because he definitely, I mean, when you go after a guy who picks up your Sony Walkman from, like, 1987 or something, I mean, you kind of have balls to do that, especially when you're in some prison. And, yeah, the music was great, just everything,
really came together and meshed. And I finally got an answer as to why the fuck, Hooked on the Feeling was playing in the trailer when we first saw the bootleg cut of it from, like, way back when. I was like, why are they playing Hooked on a Feeling? Oh, because it's blasting out of Star-Lord's old, tape player.
His old CD player. In his head.
Yeah, right? No shit. So, that being said, I am looking forward to seeing a bit more. They did focus a lot on Chris Pratt as Peter Quill, which is fine. He's obviously the central protagonist to the story. I definitely want to see more of the side characters. We didn't get a lot of Yondu. We didn't get a lot of Ronan. We didn't get a lot of Glenn Close as Nova Prime. I want to see more of those characters. I want to hear Rocket and Groot speak, even though I know Groot won't have much to say. Well, I mean, he will, but he won't. And I want to see Drax kick fucking ass. I want to see him lay down the...
Yeah, you can. Just go watch a WWE wrestling event and you'll see
Drax. Look, for what we got, it is a very, very solid trailer. I am so beyond excited. This movie is promising to be such a breath of fresh air from the usual superhero fare. I mean, all kinds of Marvel Cinematic movies. I don't think we've had one where it went into space. I mean, we had Asgard stuff, but even that was only temporary. I mean, we got a lot more Thor on Earth and stuff. This looks to be the first movie that really broadens the horizon of Marvel cosmic as we know it, which I am super excited for. And James Gunn, I could not be happy with him at the helm. I have faith in the man. I have faith in Chris Pratt. I have faith in the supporting cast. I have faith in everything about this movie, and I know it's not misplaced, no matter what this naysayer over here is going to try and protest. So, unless you want to hear me fanboy some more, that's really all I got. Just everything about it struck the right notes. It got me excited. It promises something different, a different sort of look at the Marvel Cinematic, and I am so excited for that. And I am dying to see where this lands in the greater scheme of the Marvel Cosmic, or the Marvel Cinematic, and, God, I hope it gets a sequel already. I'm really hoping for it. But yeah, that's my cut. I'm done. So,
all right.
At least until I got a rebut to something Taser says. So we'll go.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to hate Taser.
First of all, this was a teaser. We didn't see anything that says anything about what the story was or who these people are, aside from, oh, look, their names and, what they're there for. All right. Beyond that, what the fuck is the story about? Nobody knows because this doesn't say anything. They just spent, freaking 30 seconds going, ooga, chaka, ooga, and just showing scene of, 2 seconds of movement, which does jack shit. All right, it does nothing to help explain what's going to happen. So, yeah, middle finger to that. Second of all, Hooked on a Feeling. Okay, fine, it's a nice song. Doesn't fit the property. Okay, there's nothing about the trailer that you can attach this song to, and it fits. It doesn't work. All right, I like the song, but it was horribly misused here, on top of which, as an added denim, the scene with him going into the room and, hey, you let go of my Sony Discwalk player, whatever. Okay, fine. That tells me that it's something personal to him and he's willing to go to town to get it back and defend it, which is fine. But to think that, oh, yeah, and that, that is attached, that works well with the song. No, because Hooked on the Feeling came out in the fucking 60s, okay? So for that matter, you could have had either, it could have been a Walkman or Discman or an MP3 player or fucking Reed Richards' super futuristic nanobots, and it would have been the same damn thing, right? The song doesn't fit, okay? It's a nice song, and it makes you, it invokes a nice feeling of bouncy and
it
smiley.
It pumps you up. It gets you excited. It is war drum
trailer.
Taser.
It does not work for the trailer.
It totally works for the trailer. You missed the greater context.
It doesn't work for the trailer, okay? I'm sorry. It doesn't. All right, I'm not saying I could tell you what song would work there. That song doesn't work. Third of all, it doesn't look fun. And my gripes with the, squadron. Oh, wait a minute. I completely forgot to do something for the two of you. Remember that scene? Remember how everything opened up with him pulling off the Indiana Jones, and he's taking the thing in the tomb. And as he gets his hands on it, two or three guys walk in, one of them being Jimon Hounsou from, Amistad, I think he was?
Yeah, I think so.
Guess who he is?
I heard of this guy.
Yeah.
What's his name? Is it Korlak? Is it Korlak?
Korlak the Blue.
Yeah.
Blue Kree. So, yeah, again, this is Marvel's attempt at diversity, like with Adwale Ajumanja, whatever the hell his name was, that was in Thor, playing one of the Dark Elves. But they couldn't be bothered to make him pale like everybody else. They just wanted to keep him black. So, yeah, you could see that the elves have diversity.
We're down with the brothers, yo.
Yeah, bullshit. Okay? This is more. This is another example of lame-ass diversity. All right? There's nothing wrong with having blue people. All right? I realize that, you know, when Marvel created the Kree, that, you know, there's blue and the minority are, you know, Caucasian, you know, white, whatever you want to call them. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with having blue. So why couldn't they have done that? This is just like, oh, look, he gets caught by a brother. And I didn't even realize who he was, or rather who he was supposed to be. I just kind of remember just now, hey, he's in this. So who is he supposed to be? And sure enough, I look it up and I'm like, I know this. No. So he's a Kree.
I don't think they'll keep him a Kree.
All kinds of what the fuck. All right?
I don't think they'll make him a Kree. And if they do, then they're obviously throwing out skin tone. Because nobody could be as foolish as to make an entire race blue skin and save one guy to be black. There's no way. There's no way.
Really? They just made an entire race of people white and left one guy black in Thor.
I'm pretty sure there was at least another black guy in there.
There's Hogan. He's Asian.
Yeah, but he's not a dark elf. So, yeah.
Well, hey, dark. It's in the name.
Yeah, it's in the name. Shut up. and then, oh, look at Nebula. She's actually blue. I believe she's actually blue in the movie, too. Because I think we've seen a screenshot of her somewhere.
Yeah, she's blue.
Yeah, she's been there twice, flipping her knives out and then choking another
right,
dude.
Right,
so.
Right. Correction. So,
played by the Doctor Who companion.
Blue guy and
Aaron Gillen, yeah.
White blue woman. You know, we can't have blue races, you know, more than one. So we have to make a choice because blue is expensive to put on people. You know, that kind of bullshit.
Yeah, just ask Jennifer Lawrence.
I don't know what that means.
She's Mystique.
Ah, yeah, good point.
Or X2, where they had Nightcrawler and Mystique on the same screenshot.
Yeah, although, look at Mystique, and then look at Mystique and look at Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler doesn't change color, and he's a different hue. Mystique changed color a lot, and form, and clothing, but, you know, I'm just saying.
Hey, she always liked the ladies.
Hey, two snaps, but, you know. I'm just I look at this, and I don't see what you people see.
I honestly think
there's nothing that tells us what the hell is going on in this movie, in this trailer.
Can't you just have a sense of whimsy and be excited?
I think honestly,
this isn't Harry Potter. This isn't fucking Lord of the Rings.
It's as close as they get to something fucking magical in Marvel Cinematic if they have their way. All we're going to see is...
If I wanted magic, I'd go see fucking Thor. Except, as we found out in Thor 2, they don't use magic. It's all fucking tech. And they're not gods. So, the fuck? We won't get magic until we get Doctor Strange. And even then, I'll bet you'll be fucking nanotech there too. Okay? No, this trailer with this teaser was bullshit. All right, it doesn't. As a matter of fact, I asked my roommate to look at this, and he didn't know what the fuck was going on. Now, he like you two, he doesn't know a whole lot about Guardians of the Galaxy, but he said it didn't lead him to wanting to see the movie, you know. And he's a big Marvel fan. He's enjoyed. He also reads comics. So let me put that out there first. And yes, he does read Marvel. But this trailer did nothing for him And I didn't say anything to him. I just said, go look at it. You know, so there you go. Now, that's not an indicator that, yes, the movie will suck. Neither will my words mean that as well. But as somebody who actually has read quite a bit of Guardians of the Galaxy, I can look at this and say, what the fuck? Okay. Now, if we do get another trailer that actually gives us something to work with beyond slick, quick movement, quick movement, quick movement, quick movement. Okay, maybe that might impress me. Maybe that might change my mind. This teaser does not do that because there is no substance to it. You people are fucking insane for liking this movie because of that. And I'm saying,
why is that? Because we were enthralled by something that didn't.
Yes, that has not.
Doesn't have to spell itself out for the first 5 minutes. No,
awesome. And it's just a round cloud. That's what that is. Or better yet, you staring at a smokestack. And ooh, look, it's steam. Yay, my world is complete.
What the fuck are you talking about? This is a fucking Guardians of the Galaxy movie, okay? No, see, the thing you're not understanding is...
As a matter of fact, this teaser was worse than cotton candy. It's rotten for your mind. There's nothing there.
I like it.
All right, here you go. So, yeah. That's my hate.
You have such hatred.
Well, I'm and pretty sure you
so
delivered.
Not unfounded, but just unnecessary. Why can't you just enjoy?
It
is totally, completely unnecessary. Unnecessary.
I seek to enlighten.
Okay, but fine. Can I ask you something then? Can I ask you a question, honestly?
Yes.
What were you expecting from the trailer?
Something about the story.
I think that's where you ultimately failed. I don't like trailers that spell out the story.
It doesn't have to spell out everything, but there has to be something there about what's going on beyond these people got caught.
No, the trailer has to and it didn't do it for you, so it didn't work in that aspect for you, but the trailers, any kind of teaser trailer is supposed to make you want to see the movie. For a lot of other people besides you, that's what it did. It doesn't necessarily have to tell you.
You know what it did? It played the song and you people went, yay!
No, I no, that...
Fort Bus. Yay! That's what it did.
That's not what it did for me. What it did for me was...
You're from Texas. There you go. That answers that.
I honestly think this is a of you being really close to Guardians, and it's a property you care about a lot, and it's being handled in a way that you're not, from how your perspective is not being handled the way you would want it to.
I honestly not completely judge it like that. Because I haven't seen anything. Now, granted,
from what we have seen, you have been, let's be honest here,
and
negative.
Casting. All of that came from casting because I didn't know anything about the story. I still can't judge the story.
Jesus, I didn't know what the story, and I haven't even I didn't.
No, but it's like
I can't completely bash this movie. I don't know anything about the story, but all I'm looking at is. Right now, all I've seen and all I know about is casting decisions. And while I'll admit I'm not happy with Zoe Saldana being picked to play Gamora.
Well, I don't think anyone's really happy with that one.
I can still work with it. If I can work with, you know, the stick figure from Fast and Furious playing Wonder Woman, ultimately, I can ultimately work with her when I see it. All right? She'll get the fair chance because, if anything, I'll do that. I'll give you the chance. All right? If you convince me... Hey, if Michael Keaton can convince me that, yeah, he's fucking Bruce Wayne, you know, whatever.
God, he convinced you of that? That was awful.
I love this. Yes, he did.
Michael Keaton's Batman was superior. His Bruce Wayne was lacking.
I'm just saying his Bruce Wayne was excellent. His Batman is something else entirely. All right.
Look, I can understand. Taser, you can hate all you want, but the point is... Yeah, I know. It's what you do. So I can't really fault you there. You know, I expected this going in.
I haven't seen anything of this movie, too.
And we have a long road to August, so who knows? Maybe things will turn around.
Which is completely fair.
And even then, maybe none of this turns you around. Movie comes out, boom, you love it. It could happen. I'm just saying.
Fair enough.
Because sometimes Because fuck it, I love the GL trailers. Look how that shit turned out.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't like any of it. And I ended up going to see the movie and still hating it.
We'll see how it goes. It's a long way till August. I'm pretty sure I would expect right around May, April, like after Captain May, June, that's when we're going to get like indoctrinated with Guardians of the Galaxy stuff every fucking where. Watch.
And I would like to remind people that I hated long on X-Men First Class.
Yeah, you did.
And remember how surprised I was.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. This could be another example of that for you. Me and Brian.
Exactly.
This could be another example. We're not bashing the movie. We're bashing. He's bad. So let's. All right. All right.
Yeah.
That. Let's. Time out. Time out. That was fun. Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah.
That was fun.
But,
fuck that movie.
But.
Fuck you.
Can we all just get excited for Captain America: The Winter Soldier next month?
Woohoo! I'm already excited for it, but I've seen that movie already.
No, we haven't. Not yet.
You know what I mean.
Stop stealing things, you freaking pirate. Okay. So
I'm pirate.
He's the butt pirate, though.
Oh!
So let's move on to individual reviews.
Wow.
Sodomy was a crime at one. Oh, whatever.
Hi-oh!
So,
you motherfucking gay cowboy.
They didn't call it Sodom and Gomorrah for nothing. All right. So let's go on to individual reviews.
Let me stop.
God damn it. Let's go on to individual reviews. I'm going to talk about a book we haven't talked about in a long time, and that is Indestructible Hulk, Brian's favorite title for a comic book. This is the second to last issue of this volume when it relaunches in April with the new number one. This is still, you know, the one thing I noticed about this issue when I first got it, I'm like, it says Inhumanity. I'm like, oh yeah, that is a thing. I already don't give a fuck. Well, I mean, like, I give a fuck in the context of the story, but in terms of Inhumanity, it was like, I don't give a fuck. I forgot all about it. So this has to do with one of Banner's scientists who apparently was a latent inhuman, has inhuman DNA. Inhuman DNA because of the Terrigen Mist combining with Dr. Banner's time bomb that he created in the last issue. So this is sort of the fallout from that. And you get a nice monster fight. I haven't seen Hulk just fight a monster in a while. And he actually talks in this one in his classic Hulk talk. Not in his intelligent one, but you know what I mean. So, we get a classic monster fight, and some great overall fun. We get some hints of this new think tank that's going after the cocoons that the new Terrigen Piss people are. So we have that. we get a great one of my favorite things about this book was the Banner's team. They're officially on Hill's. You're on my list. Because they fled the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier without clearance, so now they're in trouble. And so the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who's flying the ship, he's telling them, I can't stop you. It's my orders. And one of the doctors, and like if my friend was the Hulk or Dr. Banner, I would do this all the time. Like, hey, do you know who we're carrying? The doctor. Yeah, named in the orders and And he tells him, look up on your call sheet who, what's his name? Looks at the call sheet. And then the way the artist draws his face, it's that sheer look of terror. Sort of similar to how Scarlett Johansson had when she first saw the Hulk in the Avengers movie. It was like, oh dear God. And Banner tells him, now wouldn't it be nice if right about now you could send them a report that you had a mechanical ferry allowing us to land down anywhere? Yeah. Okay. We'll land. Don't get angry, please. So we have that, and we have some drama in between some of the scientist members the guy who was exposed to the terrorism is captured by this think tank, one of the think tank people, who knocks out Banner by slamming him against the wall, forcing him to Hulk out. They disappear, the last page is the Hulk, like, in full rage mode and lots and lots of muscles with one of the scientist females who, she's the one who has the incurable disease and she was trying to commit suicide earlier in the series. Basically, and she thought that this inhuman, that this guy who turned into a human had some kind of key to unlock a cure for it. And so she's pissed, and she's basically punching the Hulk, which I'm thinking, that's not going to end well for her. That's not going to end well for her. So, you know, I completely forgot about this book. You know, it was something that I didn't think about. Then I realized, oh, yeah, I really did like this one, especially the last issue as well. But, you know, second to last issue of this, so it's been fun. I really like the artist. Rapak is the name, and it's nothing fancy, but I thought his Hulk was great. You know, I really enjoyed his Hulk, classic purple pants and everything. So yeah, some great pages of just Hulk being Hulk, Hulk smash. Hulk, who doesn't love Hulk? I love Hulk. You love Hulk?
Meh.
Really? Fuck, am I the only one who loves the Hulk? Okay. Brian, you're talking about the last issue of Wolverine the X-Men number 42.
Well, before they relaunch into number one.
Well, yeah, this Wednesday.
Yeah, that's happening. I gotta say, though,
No, I'm not really excited for the new relaunch, but I am sad to see this series go. Let me just give you a quick rundown. Written by Jason Aaron, of course, and illustrated by a slew of artists who I'm assuming have all had a hand in the series at some point or another. The list includes Nick Bradshaw, Pepe Larraz, Ramon Perez, Sean Crystal, Steve Sanders, Nuno Alves, Tim Townsend, and Chris Bocciolo.
What movie is this?
Wolverine and the X-Men number 42.
Oh, never mind.
Okay. So, as is the way with X-Men books, it's graduation day for the Jean Grey School, but peppered throughout are also flash forwards into a possible X-Men future. Because it just wouldn't be an X-Men book if we didn't get a look at the future. Now would it? No, it wouldn't. That having been said, this issue focuses a lot on Quentin Quire and Wolverine, respectively. What we get is pretty much throughout graduation day, Quentin's brooding and stuff. He's depressed because where he was once had to come to the school and change and stuff, he was a wanted terrorist. Now he's the most popular kid in school. Everybody loves him. He's losing his edge, pretty much. And they even get Cap to come down and stand up for him at the graduation ceremony. And Quentin just has a talk with Wolverine after the ceremony's over and all that. And he just laments the fact that he's become a part of a family because he really never wanted that. And he really just hates it. Or at least he pretends to. And Wolverine, of course, gets some spotlight near the end of the issue where he goes dancing with Storm and shit. And, you know, wakes up next to her in bed and stuff. But Wolverine's moments really come in the flash forwards. We're not given a specific timestamp, but it's well on. Wolverine's old and gray and bearded and stuff. Edie, I believe it. Idie? Nobody? Okay.
It's IDIE, right? I think that's...
Yeah, I think it's... ID? Okay, so I'm going to go with that. ID's visiting Professor Logan in the future because he's shutting down the Jean Grey School. And we really kind of see just how the school is dwindling stuff, and X-Men have gone their own way and everything. And Wolverine's lamenting the fact of how, you know, the X-Men aren't the family they used to be and stuff. He name drops a few of them. Apparently, Henry went insane, so Beast went a little cuckoo. Bobby's stuck up in some ice castle, and Aurora's fate is kind of alluded to, but never really explicitly mentioned what happened. However, what we do get is we learn that Krakoa moved out, and we learn that the Banffs are all over the place, apparently working as legitimate people. Brew is the head of S.W.O.R.D. Q-Bark is a super guardian and is punching Thanos. That's a direct quote from the book. He sent pictures. The Future Foundation is up and running, and actually, they opened a branch in the Negative Zone. Enrollment's at around $4 billion, and so
I love when future stories do shit like this.
Yeah, they name drop a whole bunch of shit, and Wolverine's like, "Shit, no one will even notice we're gone." Negative Zone up at $4 billion. Also, what we get is her being called away. Apparently, there was a distress call coming from Thunderbird, and I-Man and Shark Woman are in route to deal with the problem at Xavier Mountain. And, of course, they're combating the new Brotherhood led by none other than Snot. Yeah. Snot. And so when she goes to deal with that, what we get is Quentin Quiry, the Phoenix. Yes, in the future, he's the Phoenix. Shows up at Wolverine's door, is kind of like, I heard you were shutting this place down. Not at all sad to see it go, but hey, while you're here, I might as well give you something to do. And so what he does is he's taken every single mutant enrollee in the Future Foundation and dropped them at the Jean Grey School and given Wolverine a new class to teach, pretty much. With Quentin only saying on the way out, just promise to make their lives as miserable as you made mine. And in that moment, you kind of see Quentin's really turned around his opinion of the school and Wolverine's been given purpose again, because he was kind of lamenting the fact that he lost something along the way. It's about 2 million new students he brings in. And so, you know, it doesn't really feel like a conclusive ending. There wasn't a whole lot, to the book really touched upon that spelled the end for the school. It really just feels like, oh, it's a break in the series or whatever, an end of the story arc. It'll come back pretty soon. And, oh, one more thing. Fucking Dupe turns away a couple of would-be conquerors at the Xavier School with the power of a guitar.
But no. Not the power of guitar, the power of funk.
Funk? It's funk?
Yes, it was the...
He wails on just Swarm and this other dude, and they run, what is that noise? And they run screaming, and Dupe just kicks back in this... in this lounge chair with a drink, and it's just, he's the coolest guy. But yeah, that's
yeah,
like
the funk, he's killing us with the power of funk.
We want the funk. Yeah, so it's really, it's
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but really, this series, this issue, I should say, is made up of a lot of little moments that culminate in somewhat of a heartwarming ending, but not really a satisfying conclusion, probably because it's not really a conclusion. Like Iggy said, it'll be picking up, I think, the following week, yeah? Next week?
Yeah, this Wednesday, all number one. Wolverine yeah. X-Men number one.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, it is what it is. It was a cute little send-off. Didn't really feel like one, but it got the job done. Although, actually, there's one other exchange I really, really liked, where it's they invite the parents or caretakers of certain people to the graduation, and what we get is Agent Brand and Phantom X chatting each other up. Like, Phantom X turns to her and goes, apologies, but your child appears to be a flesh-eating alien. Agent Brand turns to him without a beat and goes, and yours appears to be Apocalypse. He responds, touche, perhaps you'd like to join me for dinner sometime to swap parenting advice?
Go back to Psylocke, you man-whore.
And she retorts with, perhaps you'd like to get deported to Mars. So, this, like I said, little moments like that are really what make up this issue. You know, little name drops, hints at what the future may hold, and little character moments. But nothing really overarching, nothing really urgent going on. It's really just sort of a, let's take a moment to breathe. These kids are graduating, sort of. They'll be back, you know, next week. But for now, let's just give them the satisfaction of having done something with their lives and their abilities. So, it was a cute little send-off. And it really felt like filler in between issues, but like I said, it was a decent read. I can't hate it. It's too nice to hate on it, you know.
I'm gonna miss reading this book.
Yeah, I'll miss it by Aaron for sure. The team picking it up is don't tell me. Latour and Azrar, they'll be picking it up come next week. So we'll see how that plays out. I won't be going into it as committed as I was to Jason Aaron and Bradshaw on the series, but I'll give it a fair shot because I do like this book and I like these characters and I like the setting. So we'll see where it goes. I'll cap it with a 4 out of 5 Warriors. It was a real good read. Like I said, nothing really urgent, but sometimes you need a breath in between to really get your bearings. So at least they didn't really leave anything dramatic hanging in the air for Latour to try to pick up and scramble with. So there's that.
And to wrap up our individual reviews, we're going to go with the all-new New Warriors, number one. New. Please tell me this book was somewhat good.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. It remained interesting.
Scarlet Spider's in this one, isn't he?
Yeah, which kind of was part of what made it interesting.
Oh, okay.
Because this is like, what, the second time they've tried to put a Spider character on the New Warriors. And
I think so, yeah.
You know, I just, considering how old he's supposed to be compared to everybody else, and I don't know, and considering his attitude, I don't see it working, but I don't know enough about what Kane's been going through, because I didn't read, I stopped after issue 3.
Is that book still going on, or did they get canceled?
I think they canceled that, didn't they?
What book?
Scarlet Spider.
No, I think it's still going on.
I thought they canceled it.
We have to ask Arnold.
I'll double check it right now, but you can go ahead.
Right. Well, Scarlet Spider. Excuse me. New Warriors, done by, and this is for West, Christopher Yost, Marcus Toe, and David Carril. Now, I don't know which one does which, because I'm not sure who does what. But, yeah, I just needed to read off some names. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Here we go. Oh, Yost is a writer. Okay. And Marcus Toe is an artist. And David Carril is color art. Yay. So, yeah, it is that. Anyway. first page. And this is probably for Iggy and maybe you too, Fearless. We get the death of Bova.
Who the fuck is that?
Oh, my God.
Is it Bofunga? Is it?
No.
Are they being invaded
Remember the manimal, the person that raised Wanda and Pietro?
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Her?
Yeah. We see her dragging her body across the... across the floor, leaving a bloody trail.
I didn't even realize that was her. Holy shit.
Really?
Yeah, dude. I read the issue, so I'm sitting there. I'm like, who is this chick, man? I feel like I know her from
but I couldn't place her.
Oh my God.
So if you read it, you know how surprising it is to find out who it was that killed her. But I'm not saying that just yet.
Yeah, that's good on you. Well, it builds.
Yeah. Exactly. The story's actually broken up in, like, what, about 4 stories. The team hasn't come together yet, so to speak. So it's basically 4 stories, and I guess they're going to link up at some point. First, we get Justice and Speedball. I got to say, I'm not a fan of them reverting Robbie Baldwin back to the Speedball persona.
Really?
Going back to using,
really happy with that.
No, going back to him using the powers the way that he does is fine, but him being silly, happy-go-lucky, that takes away all of the stuff that he went through. Now, granted, it was some hard shit that he went through post...
He got stabbed. He got a costume that was stupid.
Right, and it, well, okay, right. The whole penis thing.
I like the helmet. Okay, I don't mean to cut it. Okay, for those of you who don't remember, this was when I started reading comics. Penance was a costume. If you remember, Penance was a creation because Bobby felt remorse because of all, 600 people had died? So
600 plus.
He cast a costume designer to create a costume where... because now his powers, at that point in time at least, were triggered by pain. So the costume basically, and I don't know how the fuck he lived because of blood loss alone or infection, the blood loss was built in with 612 spikes, one spike for every person that died. The bigger ones were the kids. I remember this because it was the first new character that I read when I started reading comics. It was fucking stupid.
I think his powers also helped his healing.
Oh, did it? I don't remember that. I just remember that's fucking stupid. Even I didn't know the character that well, his people that well. I was like, that's fucking stupid. Then I saw him in Avengers Academy when he was like, that's fine. That's fine.
Well, I liked him on Avengers Academy because there he had kind of moved past the whole super dark thing, and then they did the whole thing during Fear itself when the woman whose kid had died during that whole explosion thing, and he ended up helping her out and some stuff, and then she found out that he was one of the New Warriors, and then, you know, people wanted to go batshit crazy on him, and da 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 da, and she came to forgive him for what had gone on, and he forgave himself. That's character progress, mm-hmm. and I don't have a problem with that. But it also showed he had matured a bit, which is what I liked. Because, you know, Robbie was also the youngest one on the New Warriors. But here, we've got old Robbie again. And that's kind of what I don't like. It's just like all of that just didn't happen. You know, the characters, you know, he's come full circle.
Well, thanks to the reboot, it didn't happen.
Wait. What are you talking?
No, hold on.
It actually did happen. Yeah.
What are you talking? Stop saying shit like that. Jesus, there was no reason.
Does it upset you?
Because yes,
suck your anger.
Because there was no R. Nobody hit the R button. They hit.
No, but hold on. Post heroic age, it is kind of like none of that should happen.
Okay, that's because they haven't addressed it. But when they do address it, it happened. There was no cop. Okay. Here's my rule. If there was
no note made in the comic to go back and read Civil War number one to find out what the hell happened to the New Warriors.
Okay. Here's the thing. There was no cosmic shifting event. Therefore, everything that happened before still happened. Unlike the New 52. So stop calling it a reboot. It's a relaunch that says we're not going to talk about the past right now because we're going to go forward. We will talk about the past when it's relevant. That is my stance. There you go.
So is that what happened to Spider-Man?
Yes.
Is that a cosmic reboot?
No, that was a reboot. I will agree that was a reboot. For him,
it was a cosmic reboot.
It wasn't a cosmic reboot; it was a reboot for him.
Okay.
Because nobody else was affected.
What case was the book?
Was.
Who?
And Harry Osborn.
Okay, the Spider-Man, his dopey group of friends were affected. Captain America wasn't affected. Okay.
Okay.
Let Taser review his book. Taser, go ahead.
Well, anyway, we start out here with, like I said, Justice and Speedball. They're moving through New Salem, Colorado. They get into a mess with Salem 7, which is a team of people who apparently were the sons and daughters of the devil who have powers and are trying to turn their lives around. Because actually, I kind of remember some of these people. They, you know, we're the sons of the children of the devil. Brr. And I guess they're reforming. And we find out that, you know, during the course of the book, that Speedball had actually bumped into this big blue devilish-looking guy, although he's red, and kind of overreacted, and they started to fight, and then it turned into a whole big brawl and everything else like that. And they take him, the woman who leads it, I forgot her name, she takes him through the town, and, you know, New Salem is actually a bit of a haven for magic-oriented people. You know, they can, like Utopia was for mutants. That's what New Salem in Colorado is for them. And, you know, it seems like they're actually, you know, making it work. But then, and I feel this, I think you got to agree with me, these guys just showed up and then just started wiping the floor with
everything. Oh my God, they punked these dudes without even trying.
And these guys, as a character design, holy hell.
Mm-hmm.
That shit, impressive is not the word. It's simply gorgeous, and it's simple. It's a somewhat highlighted faceplate, a circular Iron Man-esque illuminated chest, and matching things on the shoulders, and everything else is just nebulous. It's like, I would love to have this as a costume. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Oh, my God. And they, like I just said, they just start wiping everything out. You know, it's half-breed mutant, die. You know, they're like sentinels. You know, everything, die. And that seems to be the theme with the book, because they show up in New York with this woman, Stella Burke, who's called Sun Girl. I've never heard of her, you know. She seems to be wearing some type of flight suit with wings, and she's got some offensive capability, and she's stopping crime, and, you know, she's checking, like, through police vans for stuff, and she seems to somewhat know Spider-Oc, because she hears something going on and Spider-Man's involved. Just like, ill jerk. And there's some mess going on in the subway, so she goes down underneath and she runs into them there and they're just tearing through shit. You know, I think they're wiping out Morlocks because one of them there, what's the one with the mutant with the bone thingy?
Oh, Marrow.
Marrow, excuse me. I think that's her in the foreground. The others I don't recognize. But, you know, it's like people wearing baggy stuff and, you know, the people in the sewer. So, I mean, what else would you think? But, yeah, they're there and they're just wiping out Morlocks, you know. And I mean, that ends her story right there. You know, we don't get much more past that. What else? Then we get, what's his name? In Mexico, we got Kane, who's with this girl, Araceli. A-R-A-C-E-L-Y. I don't know who she is. Little, small, short female who's his tag-along or something like that. And
something like that.
You know, I got to be honest. He's supposed to be Peter Parker, and I don't see it. You know, looking at him with the short hair and the 3 o'clock shadow or whatever, I don't see Peter Parker, but which is fine. You know, I don't really care here. But he's in Mexico because he's trying to get away from being a hero or something. And this woman is tagging along and, you know, she senses trouble in this alley and it turns out that it's just a couple being mugged. And Kane's trying to walk away from it. He's like, no, he ain't got to do nothing. He's like, they're in trouble. He's like, that's not my problem. But you're a hero. Excuse my voice. And Kane ends up putting on the costume, jumping in. And, you know, he's got a wrist spike. Did anybody know that?
Oh.
Yeah, he jumps down in costume on the guys. They've got guns. And he stabs a guy through the forearm with a spike that came from his, you know, underneath the where his web shooters would be. And then he's also got some kind of burn touch.
Okay.
I mean, you guys, somebody, either you two had to have read more Scarlet Spider than I did.
Arnold didn't read a single page.
I read like two issues.
Okay. And he wasn't like this before, then.
I don't remember a spike or a web or a venom touch. I thought you were talking about Miles Morales. I'm like, he can't do that.
No. Well, okay, maybe it's something that happened to him.
Yeah, because it's the same writer who writes that book, so.
Okay, then maybe it's something that happened to him there. And I thought King was supposed to be a little different power-wise, but, you know, King came along during my time away from Marvel, so I don't have a whole lot of knowledge, you know, when it comes to him.
He's still evil, but, as far as I'm concerned. Fuck that guy.
Oh, well, fair enough. But he drops two of them, and the third guy left, you know, grabs the girl of the couple, and he, you know, he's like, you stay back. I'll do something. I'll hurt her. And apparently the woman that was with Kane, she's a demigod. Her name's Araceli Penalba, excuse me, a.k.a. Hummingbird.
Hmm.
I've never heard of her before. She's a demigod, manipulation of emotions and levitation. And she makes him afraid of spiders. And she's also green. Which, okay, you know, it doesn't hurt or anything like that. And Kane yells at the couple to get the F out of Dodge. And with that, what are you doing in Mexico? Leave, which is actually kind of funny. So
no one comes to Mexico.
Yeah, right?
Unless you're doing drugs, in which case, welcome.
So they end up on the beach and they're, you know, drinking margaritas and, you know, witty banter and, you know, Kane's trying to get away from everything and she's reading his mind and he's like, all my life I was dying, I was given a second chance, I'm not going to throw it away again. I tried the hero thing in Houston and nearly got everyone I cared about killed. Woe is me. And then he kind of notices that, it's the girl, where she says, man, the water really picks up the light. And he goes, that's not the light making it red. So they go towards the shore, and their bodies, you know, floating, you know, in blood. So when they take another look at them, oh, those are Atlanteans. And right at that moment, you hear surface dwellers. I am Phyrus Sar Namora of Atlantis, and I seek heroes. And I'm looking at this, I'm like, oh, look, it's Namorita. Because you have to have an Atlantean chick if you're going to do New Warriors. You know, it's just a requirement.
Is this the blue one or is this the white one?
No, she's a blue one.
Okay.
You know? So she would be of the majority. And then last but not least, we get to Nova, who's fighting...
This is the kid, right? This is the new guy.
Yeah, and he's still a kid, which completely fucks with my head from Avengers vs. X-Men, but whatever the hell. And his book is still kind of interesting, which is why I still read it.
Lol.
Yeah, fair enough. But he's going up against a... I don't know. I think he's some type of dire wraith hybrid or something like that. But he kicks things ass. Oh, correction. He has its ass kicked before he can do so. But he ends up having an encounter with the evolutionaries. As we discovered their name.
Wait, of the High Evolutionary?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Because that's the guy who's apparently behind him. And they look at him and they call Nova, or at least the thing that's on the ground. Wait a minute, hold on, I'm trying to get the reference correct. No, they were talking about the thing that Nova was fighting. But the High Evolutionary apparently knows who Sam Alexander is, because he called him by his name. And he's kind of happy that, you know, Nova's been KTFO'd for whatever reason. So that's it. You know, that's all of it. It's the start. So it's interesting. It's actually not a bad read at all. I'd recommend it. I don't know where it's going to go. And that, like I said earlier, that first page was like, holy shit, I was surprised she was still alive to find out. And I had a suspicion, but to find out that it was the High Evolutionary who ends her because he created her, yo, that's kind of, you know, all kinds of wow, man. So I recommend this. I'll give this a 4.1 Warriors out of 5. Pick it up.
See, the book interested me because of all, like, I like when teams pick. Like, it's why one of the reasons why I like Uncanny Avengers is because it's such a weird, interesting, like, dynamic. Like, this character and this character and this character. It's such a is, and forgive me, I may have been paying attention to this one. Is Vance in this team?
Yeah, he Justice.
Okay, I call him Vance Astrovic.
Fair enough.
So,
and there's one more person that's supposed to join the team because there's another guy on the cover on the left. I have no idea who the hell he is.
No sign of Night Thrasher, huh?
Well, no, because both of them are dead.
I knew the first one died, but I didn't know his brother was dead.
No, his brother died when he tried to form his own team, and he had come up with tech suits for X-Mutants.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I thought he was still...
He died in that book, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay, well, there's that.
But there's, like I said, there's another character that I guess we'll be introduced to at some point, maybe the next issue.
Looks like a fucked up Beyonder.
What happened?
Does he have Jerry Curls?
He looks like a messed up Beyonder.
Does he have Jerry Curls?
I was going to say like a young Clayface, really, you know. But
maybe.
He's got hair and his body looks dirt-ish. But, you know, I don't know who he is. I don't recognize him. But, you know, he's somebody else that I assume will be added to the team. But we don't see a hide nor hair of him in this issue.
I'll either check out the first issue or just wait for the trade. One or the other, whichever catches.
You know, I would do that You know, I would do that. And if you enjoyed that, then read the book, you know, because at least that way you'll have the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, in one nice, concise volume. But it is worth it.
Okay.
At least from That's, this issue. It is
I,
worth it.
I didn't pick it because it was I already had like 15 books that week. I'm like, it was $3.99. I was like, I'll pass for now. So
I can agree with that. But if I might say, I would also actually recommend, even though I didn't review it, I kind of wanted to, but the Iron Man Annual. You know, that Iron Man Annual wasn't bad. I recognize that it was kind of cleaning up some little dangly storylines or what have you, but that second and that third one was actually pretty good. You know, the one with the that futuristic city on the moon being designed by that Russian robot with the personality thing, but it was supposed to be powered by some weird element that would have ended up poisoning everybody. That as a bit of how do I put it?
Je ne sais quoi?
No. No. Stark apparently had come across this and it was a great idea and everything would have worked except for this one thing. So he kind of had to ruin it. And, you know, the thing was stuck there on the moon because, well, that's what its purpose was. And, apparently it was going to stay there. I don't know. I'm guessing because I didn't read the story. But Stark ends up going back there because apparently he had some exposure to this whatever omnium element in his system. You know, he had exposure to it, and it was still in the system, and he couldn't get rid of it. So he went back there to ask for this Russian android's help, and the thing started kicking his ass because it was still mad at him. But it ends up curing him anyway, and the little bit that was in his system that was poisoning him, he drained it by attaching him to the city, and he lit up the city, you know, which kind of tells you how powerful and efficient that element would have been if it just wasn't so deadly. You know, I mean, that was just really, as a sequence, that was really impressive. You see him get attached, and the city lights up and then powers down again, and, you know, now Stark is clean, but... You know, when Stark goes to apologize and say thank you, he's like, "Yeah, you're welcome. I still don't wish to deal with you. You may leave." And then as Stark's flying away, he's like, "Please come back, Tony. I am alone here." And he's like, "Don't worry, I will do that." Blah 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 blah. Now, I mean, I'm not giving the story its full weight. I know Wes would be pissed off if I was to fully review this, and I would be too. But it's actually a really good story, you know? And the backup story was all about Pepper and her meeting somebody while Stark was away, and they kind of have a connection.
Get your freak on, girl.
I got a bang.
Yeah, but it's funny because...
That's like Lois Lane banging other dudes. It's just not right.
Well, that's the thing, though. When, you know, they have a connection and they start seeing each other and they start having fun and they end up meeting at some place that had a little bit of a significance and they share some notes and he asks her to, what was it, like either become his girlfriend I think he asked her to marry him and she asked him to come work for her because he was really good as a PR man or whatever. And I thought that was, like, really cool. I mean, it was funny, but it was also really cool because, you know, Pepper was all about the business even though she enjoyed the company. And, you know, then they ended up sharing a kiss, and that was close out. But it was a really well-done and well-told story. So, yeah, I also enjoyed that Iron Man Annual, and I recommend that to anybody, at least anybody who's, you know, reading Iron Man and hasn't picked it up yet. Yeah, pick it up.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, will conclude this episode of this fiery of the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel podcast. Fiery episode.
It's kind
of
early today.
Well, yeah, we didn't. Well, missing some people, and of course, you know, some partners.
Johnny P, why would you leave me?
As long as he shows up for the movie review, we'll be fine.
Says you.
Oh, a bit of Marvel news that came out today. ScarJo is pregnant.
Not sure.
Oh, shit.
So what does that mean for...
She takes off for 9 months, helps with the baby a couple months of that, goes back to kicking ass as Black Widow.
Yeah, they could work it into the story where it's...
They don't have to work anything. Well,
yes.
No, I'd be better if it was Cap's baby.
No, I want Barton's baby.
No.
Let's give her the baby bump, too, so she's flipping with the baby bump.
God damn it.
Did you guys not see the Tumblr post where she's wearing the necklace with an arrow on it?
Oh, so it is. It's Barton's baby.
So sweet on her.
All right, so...
Suffer the heart.
Yeah, buddy.
We will see you all next week for another exciting episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel podcast.
Shut up.
All right. And that is done.
All right. Good job, guys.
All the good love when we're all alone. Keep it up, girl. Yeah, you turn me on.